and that in his own mind, the kava was only something peculiar and exotic, or even backward. He didn't care about the meaning, only that it might help fan this so-called fervor. An added distraction, that's all he wanted. And nothing about it seemed right. When we reached the washing grounds, I saw three long basins, the pressure of the river skillfully routed through them. Women lined the edges, kneeling to scrub their laundry on the stones, their knuckles split and red from the icy waters. Sickly sweet smoke drifted from one of the many nearby shops that circled the grounds, and the Komisar said he was stepping inside for a moment.
"Talk to the workers, but go no farther than the basins," he said sternly, reminding me I was to do exactly as he said. "I'll be right out."
I watched the women hunched and working, throwing their washed laundry into baskets. But then I spotted Aster, Zakiah, and Yvette across the way, huddled in the shadows of a stone wall and looking at something that Yvette held. They seemed unusually subdued and quiet, which was certainly not typical of Aster. I walked across the plaza, calling their names, and when they turned toward me, I saw the bloody cloth wrapped around Yvette's hand. I gasped and rushed over to her. "Yvette, what happened?" I reached for her hand, but she fiercely clutched it to her belly to hide it from me. "Tell me, Yvette," I said more gently, thinking I had startled her. "How did you hurt yourself?"
"She won't tell you," Aster said.
"She's shamed. The Quarter Lord took it."
I turned to Aster, my face prickling with heat. "What do you mean, took it?"
"A fingertip for stealing. A whole hand if it happens again."
"It was my fault," Zakiah added, looking down at his feet. "She knew I'd been aching fierce for a taste of that marbly cheese."
I remembered the angry, swelling stump of Zakiah's forefinger the first time I met him.
For stealing cheese? Rage descended, so utter and complete that every part of me shook. My hands, my lips, my legs. My body was no longer my own.
"Where?" I demanded. "Where is this Quarter Lord?"
Aster told me he was the metalsmith at the entrance to the Tehendra, then clapped her hand over her mouth. She pulled on my belt, trying to stop me as I stormed away, begging me not to go. I shook her loose.
"Stay here," I yelled. "All of you, stay here."
I knew exactly where the shop was. Seeing me fly into a rage, several of the women from the washing grounds followed after me, echoing Aster's words, "Don't go." I found him standing in the center of his stall, polishing a tankard.
"You," I said, pointing my finger in his face, forcing him to look at me. "If you ever so much as touch any child again, I will personally cut every limb from your worthless body and roll your ugly stump down the middle of the street. Do you understand?"
He looked at me, incredulous, and laughed.
"I'm the Quarter Lord."
The back of his meaty hand shot up, and though I deflected it with my arm, the force of his blow still sent me sprawling. I fell against a table, tumbling the contents to the ground. Pain exploded through my head where it hit the table, but my blood raced so hot I was on my feet in seconds, this time with Natia's knife in my hand. There was a hush, and the crowd who'd gathered around stepped back. In an instant, the quarrel they had expected to see transformed into something deadly. Natia's knife was too light and small to throw, but it could certainly cut and maim.
"You call yourself a lord?" I sneered. "You're nothing but a repulsive coward. Go ahead, hit me again. But in the same moment, I'll be slashing your nose from your miserable excuse of a face."
He eyed the knife, afraid to move, but then I saw his eyes dart nervously to the side. Among his wares, on a table equidistant between us, was a short sword. We both lunged for it, but But I got to it first, whirling as I snatched it, and the air rang with its sharp edge. He stepped back, his eyes wide.
"Which arm first, Quarter Lord?" I asked. "Left or right?"
He took another step back, but was trapped by a table. I swung the sword near his belly.
"Not so funny anymore, is it?"
There was a murmur from the crowd, and the Quarter Lord's eyes shifted to something behind me. I turned, but it was too late. A hand clamped down on my wrist and twisted my other arm behind my back. It was the Komazar. He yanked the sword from my hand, threw it toward the Quarter Lord, and painfully squeezed the knife from my grip. It fell to the ground beside us. I saw him noting the carved handle that was distinctively vagabond.
"Who gave this to you?"
I understood Dihara's fear now. I saw the fury in the Komazar's eyes, not just toward me, but toward whoever had given it to me. I couldn't tell him that Natia had hidden it in my cloak.
"I stole it," I told him. "What is it to you? Will you cut my fingers off now?"
His nostrils flared, and he shoved me into the arms of the guards.
"Take her back to the horses and wait for me."
I heard him yell to the crowd to go back to their business as the guards dragged me away. He rejoined us only minutes later. His rage was strangely tempered, making me wary.
"Where'd you learn to use a sword?" he asked.
"I hardly used it. I waved it a few times, and your Quarter Lord wet himself. He's a bumbling coward who's only brave enough to cut off children's fingers." He glared at me, still waiting for an answer.
"My brothers," I said. "Your quarters will be searched when we return to see if there's anything else you've stolen."
"There was only the knife."
"For your own sake, I hope you're telling the truth."
"That's all you have to say?"
"I'll pardon your threat to my Quarter Lord this time. I told him you're ignorant of our ways."
"Me? Ignorant? The cutting of children's fingers is barbaric!" He stepped closer, pressing me up against my horse.
"Starving is barbaric, princess. Stealing from the mouth of another is barbaric. The infinite ways your kingdom has kept us on this side of the river are barbaric. A fingertip is a small price to pay, but a lifelong reminder. You'll notice we have very few one-handed people in Venda."
"But Yvette and Sakaya are children."
"We have no children in Venda."
On our way back, we returned through the Veldt quarter. Again, he greeted those we passed in the street and expected me to nod in kind, as if I hadn't just seen a child mutilated by an ogre. He stopped our procession and dismounted to speak with a stout man who stood just outside an open-air butcher shop. I looked at his hands, all his fingers intact, large and stubby with neatly squared nails, and I wondered at how Gwyneth's careful observations about butchers extended all the way into Venda.
"You butchered and distributed the horses I sent with Calantha for the hungry?" "Yes, Komazar. They were grateful, Komazar. Thank you, Komazar."
"All four?" The man paled, blinked, then stumbled over his words.
"Yes, I mean, there was one, just one that I... But tomorrow I will..."
The Komazar drew his long sword from the scabbard on his mount, and the slow sound of freeing it chilled everything else to silence. He gripped it with both hands.
"No, tomorrow you won't."
In a move quick and precise, the sword cut the air, blood sprayed my horse's mane, and the man's head toppled to the ground. What seemed like seconds later, his body crumpled next to it.
"You,"
the Komazar said, pointing to a man gawking in the shadows of the shop.
"Are the new Quarter Lord.
Do not disappoint me.
He looked down at the head. The dead butcher's eyes were still wide and expressive, as if hoping for a second chance.
And see that his head's dressed up where everyone can see him.
Dressed? Like a pig that's been slaughtered? He got back on his horse, gently clicked the reins, and we moved on without another word, as if we had stopped to buy sausage. I stared at the glistening red drops on my horse's mane. Justice is swift in Venda, even for our own citizens. I had no doubt the bloody message was for me as much as it had been for the butcher. A reminder. Life in Venda was precarious. My position was still precarious, and not only quarter lords could be dispatched without so much as a blink.
"We don't steal from the mouths of our brethren," he said, as if explaining his actions.
But I was certain that the quarter lord's deception was the greater crime.
"And no one lies to the Komazar," I added.
"That above all."
When we dismounted in Council Wing Square, he faced me, his face still spattered with blood.
"I expect you to be well rested tomorrow. Do you understand? No more dark circles."
"As you command, Komazar. I will sleep well tonight if I must slit my own throat to do it."
He smiled. "I think we're beginning to understand each other at last."
Chapter 37. Rafe.
There was no sign of Jeb when we returned, but knowing he was here, looking and sounding more Venden than ever, helped to ease my mind. Somewhat. I had seen today what could be his fate if he were found out, what could be all of our fates.
"You don't have to do that," Calantha said.
"Habit," I said.
"Emissaries in such a grand kingdom as Dalbrek brush down their own horses?"
"No, but soldiers do, even soldiers who are princes." "My father bred horses," I said as an explanation. "It's the way I grew up. He said horses return twofold to a rider how they are treated. I've always found it to be true."
"You're still disturbed by what you saw?"
The three impaled heads turned in my thoughts. I paused from my brushing.
"No. Your strokes are long and brisk. Your eyes shine like cold steel when you're angry. I'm getting to know your face well, emissary."
"It was savage," I conceded. "But what you do with your traitors is of no concern to me."
"You don't execute traitors in your kingdom?"
I rubbed the horse's muzzle.
"Done, boy,"
I said, and closed the stall. "We don't defile bodies. Your assassin appears to elevate it to an art." I started to return the brush to the hook, but stopped mid-step. Calantha turned to see what I was looking at. It was Leah. The shoulder of her shirt was torn, and her face pale. With Calantha there, I had to pretend I didn't care. Leah avoided my gaze and spoke only with Calantha, telling her the Komazar was waiting outside, and she had come to retrieve her cloak, which she had left behind this morning. Had Calantha seen it? Calantha cast a pointed glance at me, then directed Leah to the back wall of the stable and a row of hooks.
"I'll be outside waiting, too," she said.
"You don't have to go," I said, but she was already leaving. Leah walked carefully past me, her eyes averted, and lifted her cloak from the hook.
"We're alone," I whispered. "Your shoulder, are you all right?" "I'm fine," she said. "It was just a difference of opinion on clothing choices."
And then I noticed a bruise at her temple. I reached up and pushed her hair away.
"What did—"
"I tripped against a table," she said hurriedly, brushing my hand away.
"Ignore it."
She kept her voice low,
her attention fixed on the cloak in her hands. We have to find a way out of here. When Caden returns, if I pulled her into the stall. Don't tell him anything. He's not like the rest of them, Rafe. He might listen if... I jerked her closer. Listen to me, I hissed. He's as savage as any of them. I saw his handiwork today. Don't say... She yanked free and her cloak fell to the ground. Stop telling me what to do or say. I'm tired of everyone trying to control every word out of my mouth. Her eyes shimmered with fear or rage. I wasn't sure which. What had happened today? Leah, I said, speaking more softly. This morning, I saw one of...
Is the emissary holding you up?
The Komazar stood at the stable entrance. We both took an awkward step back. I was just retrieving her cloak. She dropped it.
Clumsy, aren't we, Princess? But you've had a long, tiresome day.
He ambled closer.
How about you? Did you enjoy your tour today, emissary?
I worked to keep my voice even and unimpressed. The Stonegate Quarter had some interesting avenues, I suppose. And then for Leah's benefit. I also saw your assassin's handiwork. The impaled heads of the boys he executed have grown quite ripe in the sun.
That's the point. The stench of treachery. It has its own unique aroma, not one easily forgotten.
He reached out and took Leah's arm with a familiarity I hadn't seen before, and led her away. I couldn't control the burn in my chest, but I turned back to the horse as if I didn't care, brushing his coat again with long, quick strokes. This was something I'd never been trained for. There were no military strategies or drills to prepare me for the daily torment of not killing someone.
Chapter 38.
It wasn't just one or two dozen, but hundreds filling the square. I felt the Komazar's eyes on me from somewhere afar, waiting to corrupt my thoughts. I began with hesitation, trying to find that place of trust he couldn't control. The words came out awkward and self-conscious, a basic childhood prayer. I tried again, closing my eyes, reaching, breath slow and deep, waiting and waiting, despair creeping in. And then I heard something. Music. The distant faint pluck of a zitare. My aunt's zitares. And then my mother's hum rose above them, with its haunting echo that floated through the citadel. The music that made even my busy father pause from his duties. I turned my head, listening, letting it strum through me as if it were the first time, and the rote words disappeared. My remembrances began as utterances, a wordless tune that followed the music of the zitares, each note plucking out the beats of creation, swirling in my belly, a song that belonged to no kingdom or man, only myself and the heavens. And then the words came, an acknowledgement of sacrifices and a girl's long journey, and I kissed two fingers, lifting them to the heavens, one for the lost and one for those yet to come. The distant music still seemed to echo off the high stone walls that hemmed me in with the people below. Eventide. A time to be going home. But instead they stayed. A voice called out, "Tell us a story, Princess of Morrigan."
"Tell them a story, Jezalia."
There she was, only an arm's length from me, an apparition sitting on the wall, but at the same time solid, unwavering. Her long hair trailed along the stones, all the way back to another millennium.
Tell them a story.
And so I did. I told them the story of two sisters. Gather close, my brothers and sisters. Listen well, for there is one true history and one true future. Once upon a time, long, long ago, seven stars were flung from the sky. One to shake the mountains, one to churn the seas, one to choke the air, and four to test the hearts of men. I drew from the words of Morrigan, Gudrell, and Venda. I drew from Dihara, the wind, and my own heart. I drew from the truth that shivered at my neck. A thousand knives of light grew to an explosive rolling cloud, like a hungry monster. A storm that made the ways of old meaningless. A sharp knife, a careful aim, an iron will, and a listening heart. Those were the only things that mattered. Only a small remnant of the whole earth remained, but two sisters found grace. I told the story of the worlds I had seen, whole cities mowed down, no matter how far and wide they spread, and of soaring cities of immense magic that could not withstand a furious storm. I told them of exalted temples that melted into the earth, and valleys that wept with generations of blood. But through all this, two sisters remained side by side, strong and loyal, until a beast rose from the ashes and tore them from each other, because even stars thrown to earth could not destroy every last shadow of darkness.
"Where were the gods in this?" someone called.
"The gods?" I had no answer except,
"The gods wept too."
"What were the sisters' names?"
another called. Though I wasn't sure if he could hear me, I saw the Komazar's shadow pass in his tower window.
"It grows dark," I said. "Go home to your suppers. I'll tell you more tomorrow."
The room shivered with emptiness. I set about straightening the meager contents, still scattered from the guards' riotous search for hidden weapons. They gave no thought to where they threw things. I longed for the company of the people in the square again. There was more I had wanted to say, and the solitude of the room allowed my doubts to creep back in. I refolded the rumpled blankets and propped the practice swords back up against the wall. Impaled heads. The assassin's handiwork. Rafe's remark was intentional, a warning for me. What had Caden done? I remembered on my first day here that he had an urgent duty regarding soldiers he had to attend to, and his sharp refusal when I asked to go along. Was that where he had gone? To execute boys? The difference between children and adults didn't seem to exist in Venda. Had he swung a sword with as little remorse as the Komazar showed this afternoon? I simply couldn't believe it. They might both be Venden, but they were as different as fire and water. I wondered what the condemned soldiers had done. Stolen food, like the butcher? Starving is barbaric, princess. I sat down on the bed. That was why they had no prisoners in Venda. Prisoners had to be fed. Yet the council seemed to lack nothing. I had risen to pour water in the basin and wash up when I heard footsteps in the hall. A single thump shook the door, and then the lock rattled. It was Ulrich's. He cracked the door only a few inches, just wide enough to say,
"The Komazar wants you. Wear your purple. I'll wait out here."
He shut the door so I could change. It was too early for the evening meal in Sanctum Hall, and Calantha was always sent to get me. Or the Komazar himself banged on the door. Never Ulrich's. Wear the purple. Another dress that showed off the kavah, made of scraps of soft buckskin dyed with fennis. I took the folded dress from the pile on top of the chest and rubbed the soft leather between my fingers. Something isn't right. But nothing had been right for so long, I wasn't sure how one more worry mattered. Ulrich's didn't take me to the Komazar's private meeting chamber as I expected, and when I asked where we were going, he didn't answer. He led me to a remote part of the sanctum, down narrow, curving stairs in a wing where I had never been. The stairs emptied into a large, round foyer barely lit with a single torch. There was one small recessed door and hallways on either side that vanished into darkness. Before we reached the door, it opened, and a handful of quarterlords, chievdars, governors, and Ratan filed out. This wasn't the council. Malik was among them, and while I expected a smug grin on his face, they all wore self-assured expressions as they walked past me. When they had disappeared in different directions down the hallways, Ulrich's nudged me toward the room.
"Go in."
Only a hint of light came through the open doorway, a subdued golden flicker. The gods help me. I kissed my shaking fingers, lifted them to the air, and moved forward. A small candle lit a table in the center, leaving the rest of the room cast in black. I saw the faint outline of the Komazar sitting in a chair, his boots propped on the table, leisurely watching me as I entered. The door slammed shut behind me.
"You wore the purple," he said. "Good."
"How can you tell in the dark?" I heard the gentle inhale of his breath.
"I can tell."
"You hold secret meetings in dark chambers now?"
"Greater plans call for greater privacy."
"But not with the whole council?"
"I'm the Komazar. I meet with whom I choose, where I choose."
"So I see."
"Come closer."
I stepped forward until I was standing near him. He casually reached out and touched one of the loose scraps cascading from my dress.
"I have some good news for you, Princess. Something that will give you many more freedoms here in Venda. Your status is changing. You're no longer to be a prisoner."
He smiled. The candlelight danced along his cheekbone, and his lashes cast a sharp shadow around his eyes. My dress suddenly felt far too tight, and the room sickly warm. "And how did I come by this good news?" I asked.
"It seems that clan elders would like some proof of your intentions. More of a willingness on your part."
"That might be hard to come by."
"Not so hard. And it will serve the fervor."
And then he explained. His first words froze me. The next ones left me numb. Word by word, I watched his mouth move, admired the careful precision of each syllable, traveled the line of his lips, his facial hair so neatly trimmed across his jaw, the curl of his dark locks against the white of his shirt, his skin clear and warm. I traced the line of a small vein on his neck, listened to the careful pacing of his voice, magnetic, powerful, watched the flickering light play across his forehead. So much to draw my mind away as he laid out detail after detail, but it wasn't enough to block it out completely. Word by word, it was the last thing I expected to roll from his tongue. A turn I hadn't seen coming. Masterful. Genius.
devastating. You and I will wed. He looked at me, his eyes hungry, not with lust, but with something that ran much colder, gauging my every twitch and breath. I was certain he could see my blood drain to my feet. My advisors have seen how the clans have taken to you. You've charmed them. Quite a talent, since clans are tight-knit and can be hostile to newcomers. My advisors believe a marriage will come in useful during the harder times ahead. It will prove your commitment in the clan's eyes. And there's an undeniable sweetness for the rest of us if the enemy should find out their royal first daughter has not only run away from them, but straight into the arms of their adversary. A marriage of her own making, so to speak. He shook his head. We had quite a laugh over the discord that will sow. And you, of course, will make sure they know this. The news is already on its way. That was the detail that Tjevdars liked best. It's a victory for all of us. This will also put to rest any notions you may have entertained of ever returning home. If your kin scorned you for treason before, you'll be the most wanted criminal in their kingdom now.
And what of Dalbrek when they find out about this?
What of it? The prince has already voiced his opinion of the thwarted marriage. His dealings are with us now. He won't care if we behead or wed you.
And if I don't go along?
That would be regrettable. My assassin, it seems, has developed an affection for you. For the greater good of Venda, he'd overlook the new arrangement, but unless he perceives it to be your decision, I'm afraid he could become a problem. I would hate to lose him.
You'd kill Caden?
A measure of passion at last, he said, grinning, and then his eyes went dead. Yes, as he would me if I did something so stupid as to hinder the greater good. It is our way.
You mean your way?
He sighed. If that's not enough to convince you, I think I've glimpsed some lingering fondness in your eyes for the emissary. I'd hate to break my promise giving him a month for his prince to send a messenger. It would be unfortunate if he began losing fingers prematurely. I'm finding him useful, and I have to admit a certain admiration for his unabashed ambition. But he'd be expendable, too, at least pieces of him would be, unless your performance rises to stellar proportions. It's much more efficient to prevent problems than clean them up.
He stood, and his hands slid up my arms. Convince them. Convince me. I opened my mouth to speak, but his finger jumped to my lips to silence me.
Shh. His eyes grew dusky. He pulled me close, his lips searing fire against mine, though he barely grazed them as he whispered, Think, princess. Choose your next words very carefully. You know I'm true to my word. Think about how you want to proceed from this moment on.
My mind burned with the choice. He had played the winning card on my first day here. There's always more to take, isn't there, cher Komisar?
Always, my pet.
I closed my eyes. Sometimes we're all pushed to do things we thought we could never do. It wasn't just gifts that came with great sacrifice. Sometimes love did, too. Convince him. I relaxed against his touch and didn't turn away when his mouth met mine.
Chapter 39.
I sat at the head of the table next to the Komissar. Several of the governors whispered among themselves. They had noticed my new position, but said nothing openly. When he walked in with Calantha, Wraith noticed too, pausing for an extra beat as he pulled out his chair. The hall was full tonight, not just the usual council and soldiers, but elders of the clans too. The Marassi outnumbered them all, sitting at extra tables that had been brought in. I saw Ethira among them, watching me. She tilted her head approvingly at my purple dress of scraps. There were also the quarter lords, the ones I had seen leaving the hidden chamber. Their glances cut not with approval, but with stinging victory. I looked away from Wraith, whose gaze still rested on me. "Don't make a mistake, Leah. Not like..." I saw my brother's sightless eyes, the scattered pieces of body in the valley floor, the head of the butcher rolling to the ground. What had made me think I could ever outmaneuver someone like the Komissar? My head still spun with this turn I hadn't seen coming. While the Komissar was occupied with the Chievdar to his left, I asked Calantha if she would deliver the acknowledgement of sacrifice tonight. My tongue felt like sand. My head throbbed. I wasn't even sure I could conjure the words from my memory.
"No, it's left to you, Princess," she said. "You will do this."
There was a strange urgency in her tone that made me stop and look more closely at her face. Her pale eye glistened, pinning me to my chair. Insistent. The platter of bones was set in front of me, and I simply stared at it. The room grew quiet, hungry, waiting. The Komissar kicked my foot beneath the table. I stood and lifted the plate of bones and said the blessing in two languages, as Caden had done for me.
E Christav unter Kienad,
a sacrifice ever remembered.
Meunter ijotande,
never forgotten.
Yavien hal anziadre,
another day we live. I paused, the platter trembling in my hands. There was stirring, waiting for me to finish, but I added more.
E Christav ba ena, mias ba ena.
A sacrifice for you, only for you.
And so it shall be, forevermore. Paviama.
A rumble of paviamas returned to me. The hunger of the council and guests quickly overtook any notice of the added words, but I knew Wraith had noted it. He was the last to echo back paviama to me as he looked down at the table. The meal seemed to rush past. I had hardly taken a bite when the Komissar pushed back his seat, satisfied.
"I have some news to share with you, emissary."
The clatter of the meal stopped. Everyone wanted to hear the news. My stomach churned with the small morsel I had eaten. But it wasn't the news any of us expected.
"Riders from Dalbrek arrived today,"
he announced.
"So soon?"
Wraith asked, casually wiping grease from the corner of his mouth.
"Not the riders I sent. These were Ratan, who had already been in Dalbrek."
Ratan with news. My hand slid to my side, inching down for Natia's knife in my boot before I remembered it was gone. I eyed the dagger sheathed at Calantha's side.
"It seems there may be some truth in your story. They brought news of the queen's death of a widespread fever, and the king hasn't been seen in weeks, either in mourning or on his deathbed as well. I'll assume the latter until I hear more."
I sat back and stared at Wraith. The queen. His mother. He blinked, his lips half-parted.
"You look surprised," the Commissar said.
Rafe finally found his voice.
"Are you sure? The Queen was in good health when I left. You know how those scourges are. They ravage some more quickly than others. But my riders witnessed a rather impressive funeral pyre. Those royals are quite extravagant about such things."
Rafe nodded absently, silent for another long while.
"Yes, I know."
The pain of my utter helplessness surged through me. I couldn't go to him, couldn't hold him in my arms, couldn't even offer him the simplest words of comfort. The Commissar leaned forward, apparently noting Rafe's reaction.
"You cared for the Queen?"
Rafe looked at him, his eyes as fragile as glass.
"She was a quiet woman," he answered. "Not like..."
His chest rose deeply, and he took a drink of his ale.
"Not like that dried-up bastard she's saddled with? Those are the toughest ones to kill."
I watched the steel return to Rafe's eyes.
"Yes,"
he said, a frightening smile on his lips. "But even the tough ones die eventually.
Let's hope sooner rather than later, so your prince and I can strike our deal."
"It won't be long," Rafe assured him. "You can count on that. The prince may even help matters along if he has to."
"A ruthless son," the Commissar said, his words dripping with admiration. "A determined one."
The Commissar nodded his approval of the prince's pending patricide, then added,
"For your sake, I hope very determined. The days do tick by, and my distaste for royal schemes hasn't diminished. I graciously host his emissary, but not without a price that must be paid, one way or another."
Rafe managed an icy grin.
"I wouldn't worry. You'll be repaid tenfold for your efforts." "Very well, then," the Commissar answered, as if pleased with the bounty promised, and motioned for the dishes to be cleared away.
In almost the same breath, he ordered more drinks to be poured. The servants came forward with the expensive vintage of the Morrigese vineyards, one never shared beyond personal gifts to the governors. I chewed my lip. I knew what this meant. No, not now. Hadn't he shared enough news for one day? Hadn't Rafe heard enough for one night? But then he twisted it into something even worse. He made me tell them.
"Our princess would like to share some news, too."
He stared at me, his eyes chiseled stone, waiting. My muscles were loose, wobbly, drained of strength. It felt as if I had already walked 1,000 miles, and now I was asked to walk one more. I couldn't do it. I wanted to stop trying and cease to care. I closed my eyes, but a stubborn flame that couldn't be doused still burned. "Convince them. Convince me." When I opened my eyes, his gaze was still fixed on me, and I met his marble stare. He commanded a marriage, which in his own words meant many more freedoms, but more freedom also meant more power, something he hated to share. His eyes grew sharp at my delay, demanding. And maybe that was the deciding prod in my ribs, as it had always been. "Another mile. For you, Commissar." I smiled, a smile he surely thought was by his order. I'd give him his marriage, but that didn't mean I couldn't turn some fraction of this moment to my advantage. And fractions of moments after that, until they added up to something whole and fearsome, because with my last dying breath, I would make him regret the day he ever laid eyes on me. I reached out, caressed his cheek, heard the murmurs at the unexpected display of affection. Then I pushed back my chair and stood on it. The tables that had been added to accommodate the additional elders and quarter lords at the meal reached to the end of the hall. By standing on the chair, I made certain they could all see and hear me. Hold my tongue, indeed. "My brethren!" I called out, my voice loud and overflowing with all the grand flourishes that would please the Komazar. "Today's a great day for me, and I hope when I share my news, you'll agree it's a great day for us all. I owe you all much. You've given me a home. I've been welcomed by you, shared your cups of Thanis, been warmed by your fires, your handshakes, and your hopes. The clothes that adorn my back have come from you, too. I've received more than I have given, but now I hope to repay your kindnesses. Today, the Komazar has asked me to..." I deliberately paused, drawing out the moment, and watched them lean forward, sit taller, their mouths hanging open, breaths held, drinks poised, eyes riveted. I paused just long enough that the Komazar saw and understood that he was not the only one who knew how to command a room, and finally, when even he edged forward in his seat just a bit, I spoke again. "Today, your Komazar has asked me to stand by his side, to be his wife and queen. But I come to you first, because before I answer him, I must know that you think my place here will serve Venda. So I ask, what say you, elders, lords, brothers and sisters? Shall I accept the Komazar's proposal? Yea or nay?" A breathless hush filled the hall, and then a deafening, "Yea, yea!" Fists lifted to the air, hands pounded on tables, feet stomped the floor, tankards sloshed and spilled in toasts. I jumped down from the chair and leaned over the Komazar, kissing him fully and enthusiastically, which made the hall erupt in more ear-splitting cheers. I pulled back slightly, but my lips grazed his as if we were lovers who couldn't part. "You wanted a convincing performance," I whispered. "You got one."
"A little excessive, don't you think?"
"Listen, are you not getting the results you wanted? Fervor, I think you called it." The hall still roared with excitement.
"Well done," he conceded.
And then a question was shouted from an elder in the back.
"When will the marriage take place?"
The advantage was yet mine. Before the Komazar could answer, I called back to the elder, "At the rise of Hunter's Moon to honor the clan of Marassi." 6 days away. Cheers erupted again. I knew the Komazar had envisioned an immediate execution of the wedding, but now it was not only announced publicly, it was a date that would honor the clans. The girl Muras was born under a hunter's moon. If he changed the wedding day now, it would be an insult. The Komazar stood to accept congratulations. Quarter lords and soldiers pressed in, and I lost sight of him. But I saw that at least some of the governors wore wooden smiles, caught off guard by this new development. Perhaps they were unsettled that as council they hadn't been consulted. Or maybe it was something else. That I would be queen. The Komazar hadn't even blinked when I said it. If he had balked at anything, I thought it would be that. Vendans do not have royals. but I saw on our hillside rides how he seemed to flaunt it. A princess of the enemy. A tankard was thrust into my hand, and I turned to thank whoever had delivered it. It was Rafe.
"Congratulations, princess," he said.
We were surrounded, our elbows and backs touching others who mingled in the crowded room, pushing us close together. "Thank you, emissary."
"No hard feelings, right?" a nearby governor interjected.
"A mere summer distraction, governor. I'm sure you've had a few of those," I said pointedly. He laughed and turned to another conversation.
"Just a few days," Rafe said. "That's not much time to get so much ready."
"Venden weddings are simple, I'm told. A feast cake and witnesses are all that's required."
"How lucky for you both."
The air was brittle between us. "I'm sorry about your queen," I said. He swallowed hard, belying his fiery stare.
"Thank you."
I could see the rage crackling within him. He was a storm ready to tear loose, a warrior far past the point of holding back, weary of being a compliant emissary.
"Your dress is quite striking," he said.
He forced a strained smile to his lips. The Komazar was suddenly at my side.
"Yes, it is. She's becoming more Venden every day, isn't she, emissary?"
He dragged me away before Rafe could answer. The night wore long, every elder and quarterlord offering regards to the Komazar, but he received quiet, more devious nods from those who had met with him in his clandestine chambers. It was a strategic move and not a real marriage at all, not even a true partnership as the clans would expect. I watched him slowly grow irritated with the talkative clan being in the hall. These were not truly his people. They spoke of harvest, weather, and feast cakes, not weapons, wars, and power. Their ways were weak, though he reaped his army from their young. Their only common goal was more. For the clans, more food, more future. For the Komazar, more power. For the promises he dangled before them, they gave him loyalty. It was evident how much he really did need me when he walked away from one elder mid-sentence, his patience spent. He stopped short in front of me, his eyes clouded with wine, and pulled me behind a pillar.
"You must be getting tired. It's time for us to go."
He called to Ulrichs that we were retiring. It drew laughs from those within earshot. I saw Rafe watching from a distance as if he might spring. I grabbed a fistful of the Komazar's shirt, yanked him close, and whispered through a razor-tight smile, knowing we were being watched. "I will sleep in my own quarters tonight. If this is to be a marriage, it is to be a real one, and you will wait like all good bridegrooms do." The haze of wine was flushed away by his anger. His eyes cut through me.
"We both know there's nothing real about this marriage. You'll do just as I..."
"Now it's your turn to think carefully," I said, returning his glare. "Look around you. See who watches. Which do you desire more, me or the fervor of your people? Make your choice now, because I promise you, you can't have both." His expression went cold, and then he smiled, releasing my wrist.
"Until the wedding."
He yelled for Calantha to escort me to my room, and disappeared back into a circle of drunk soldiers.
Chapter 40. Caden.
I was already weary of this governor. He never stopped talking. At least the small squad of men who accompanied him were mostly silent. It was clear they feared him. If not for his province's crucial importance as a supplier of black ore to the sanctum, I would have let him trail behind us on the road to choke on our dust. It was only another day's ride before I could be rid of him. He'd fit in well with the Chievdars, though. His favorite topic was domination over the enemy swine and all the ways they should be sliced and strung. Wait until he learned we had two enemy swine sleeping in the sanctum. Neither I nor the men traveling with me had told him, hoping to avoid another tirade. Most of the time when he spoke, I tried not to listen anyway. Instead, I thought of Leah, wondering what had passed in the last 8 days. I had charged Eben and Aster with making sure she had everything she needed, and called upon Grizz to look after her, too. He had taken a liking to her, which was not in his nature, but Grizz was strong in the old ways of the hillfolk, and the gift had heft with them. With the three of them watching after her, she would be fine, I kept telling myself. I thought of the taste of our last kiss, the concern in her eyes, the softness of her voice when she asked about my mother. I thought maybe the tide was turning for us. I thought about how much I couldn't wait to return to her and listen to her chant the acknowledgement of sacrifice. Paviyama. Every word that...
And then I said to him, "Shut up, Governor!" I snapped. "For 3 blessed hours until we set camp. Shut up!"
My soldiers smiled. Even the governor's squad smiled. The governor puffed out his chest and scowled.
"I was only trying to break up the monotony of the ride."
"Then spare us. The monotony suits us fine." I went back to my thoughts of Leah. How could I tell her that I knew in my gut from almost the beginning that we were meant to be together? That I had seen myself growing old with her? That a gift I wasn't even sure she really possessed had told me her name long before I ever laid eyes on her?
Chapter 41. Pauline.
Bryn leaned forward, looking into his cider. He was the youngest of Leah's older brothers, always the cheerful, fresh-mouthed one, who got into as much mischief as Leah. The past several months had sobered him. There were no grins on his face now, no quips on his tongue.
"Regan and I secretly cheered when she bolted. We never thought it would come to this."
"Walther, too?" He nodded.
"Maybe him most of all. He's the one who left false leads up north for the trackers."
Regan leaned back in his chair and sighed.
"We had all voiced our opposition to shipping her off to a stranger and strange land. We knew she'd be miserable, and there are other ways of creating an alliance with a little persistent diplomacy. But apparently, Mother wouldn't hear of it," Bryn interjected, the first hint of bitterness in his tone.
"The Queen? Are you sure?" I asked.
"She and the Royal Scholar were the first to suggest they accept the proposal from Dalbrek."
"That was impossible. I knew the Queen. She loved Leah. I was sure of it." "How do you know this?" Regan explained that after Leah disappeared, there was a huge row between his mother and father. They were so incensed they hadn't retreated to their private chambers to vent their anger.
"Father accused her of undermining him and making him look like a fool. He said that she never should have pushed the matter if she couldn't control her own daughter. They shot the sordid details at each other like they were poison arrows."
"There has to be an explanation for all of this," I said. "Your mother loves Leah." Regan shrugged.
"She refuses to discuss the matter with any of us, including the king. Even Walther couldn't pry anything loose, and he is always able to coax things from her."
Bryn said she mostly stayed in her chamber, even for meals, and he only saw her walking the halls when she was on her way to see the royal scholar. "But the scholar hates Leah," I said. Regan nodded in agreement. The animosity between Leah and the scholar wasn't a secret.